Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, I'm Parker Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And this is SupDoc, where we discuss and dissect documentaries chosen by our guests from the worlds of comedy, film, television, and more. All month long, we're doing true crime documentaries for our annual Mayhem series.
Today, we're talking about the 2009 film Cropsey by Joshua Zeman and Barbara Brancaccio.
Staten Island's tight-knit community was the site of a series of child disappearances, and at least one body was recovered throughout the 70s and 80s. The police found one suspect, but could this one man account for the boogeyman legend of Cropsey? Was he working alone, or was he the wrong man altogether? What about the subterranean tunnels in the husk of the old mental ward, where generations of Staten Island children came to play? Cropsey is a horror movie come to terrifying life.
And our guest to discuss it is Andy Sell. Andy's a comedian, actor, and writer who co-produces a monthly storytelling show, We Still Like You. He co-wrote and co-starred in Comedy Central's Snapchat series, Nostalgiarama, and is starting the horror movie history podcast, Ghoul School, on the Unpops Network.
You can stream Cropsey on Amazon.
And now here's Andy Sell. All right, Andy Sell.
Hi.
Thanks for making it over here.
Of course.
George is stuck in robot mode. We're making the weirdest eye contact right now. I don't know why. Just like the angle of the mic that I've created, it's created a
it's
a
kind
barrier.
Of, yeah, it's a little...
A cyclops barrier.
It's a little intimidating, but it's also, you know, it's a challenge, and I like challenges.
Yeah.
I'll overcome.
And you were saying, speaking of challenges, you were saying that you have to do a lot of research for your podcast. I don't even know what's your podcast that you're doing.
It hasn't come out yet unless this comes out later, and it has.
You know, I'm going to assume that this is out in the future, and it's all retroactive, so I don't know when you're planning on releasing yours.
Early May.
Okay, this might be simultaneous.
Okay, cool. Perfect.
We're trying to drop them on the same day, so it's a maximal amount of Andy.
Yeah, we'll do a cross promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, a seller's market, as it were.
Yeah.
What is your podcast?
It's called Ghoul School.
Oh, okay.
And it's horror movie school, essentially. It's
based
on
your T-shirt, which is the New Beverly.
Yeah, I got my New Beverly
with like the
shirt.
Misfits. Well, not the Misfits, right? That's like an old French image, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but I got this at the All Night Horror Show.
Okay.
That they did last year. They do it every October.
Nice.
Where is it?
It's New Beverly Cinema on Beverly Boulevard. I don't know what that is. That mid city, midtown. I don't know.
I'm trying to think. Like, I thought the New Beverly was by Sawtelle, or is that what theater is that? You know what? I don't know.
I'm still new.
But so it's just you and with guests.
It's
or
me
how
and
it?
Adam Todd Brown.
Uh-huh.
And it's on the Unpops Network.
Oh, okay.
And it's we will start having more guests on. What we're doing is kind of like a. I gotta come up with a good way, like a good quick
elevator pitch.
Elevator pitch.
I know. We've already left that. We're out of the elevator.
I'm out of this elevator.
I'm like, wait, come back. Well, it's horror movie history essentially,
and we
kind of each season or semester, as we're going to call them, covers a different subject of. Uh-huh. Horror movie history, either subgenres or themes or formats or filmmakers, and it's each one's 6 episodes devoted to that subject.
Yeah,
and the first one is found footage horror.
Ooh, found footage. That sort of fits into like what we do on this show, doing documentary stuff.
Yeah, it
what's,
works
what's
a lot.
What's some found footage horror? Like, you're talking like Faces of Death. What are we talking?
We do cover Faces of Death a little bit in actually the most. Well, it won't be most recent. It's the most recent episode we're working on now, but it's going to be episode 3 I believe, and we cover Faces of Death a little bit, but that that episode's film focus will be the Poughkeepsie Tapes from 2007.
Whoa, what's that?
It's a pseudo-documentary.
Okay.
About
no false docs. Death to false docs.
It's a false doc, yes. it's a false doc for sure, but it's this fictional serial killer in the Poughkeepsie, New York, where they found a bunch of videos that link a bunch of different murders together that were all considered to be separate killers, but now it's like, oh, these were all the same killer. And it's it was supposed to be released in 2007, and then its release got pulled, which created some controversy, and it was actually released in 2014, I believe.
So it's a fake doc that was supposed to come out in 2007, so like even all the footage inside of it is like faked, but from even older than when it was released. Okay, got it.
It's interesting. It's an interesting little installment.
Wasn't Arthur Shawcross from Poughkeepsie?
Rochester. I'm not sure how close those are.
Yeah,
that's the episode you did with
Allison Mick.
Allison Mick. Yeah, I listened to that one.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, good old Arthur Shawcross.
Yeah, wow.
What a lovely, lovely man.
Some great paintings and drawings. Why everyone's a failed artist? Even like the murderers are failed artists.
Even Hitler. Yeah.
This is the cool thing about my podcast is that it's all fake. So I don't stay up at night wondering about these
people. Wait, so every episode is fake? I'm confused. What do you mean?
Oh, it's horror movies.
It's horror movies. It's fictional horror films.
Oh, I see.
I'm not. I mean, we do cover kind of like we.
What you're saying are horror movies are fake?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Also wrestling and Santa Claus and Democracy.
I wish people could see my tears.
Crying.
I wish
he's crying.
Wish
he's
could
crying
see my tears.
Like, yeah, like it's like a tattoo.
Why do you have to ruin everything, Andy?
That's why Paco has a tear tattoo.
It's
not because he killed someone.
But I can take it off. It's you see, it's
Look
a sticker.
At that.
It's a sticker.
Just like Infinity War.
Yeah. I can put it on either cheek.
Like what the Vision just has like teardrop tattoos instead of the thing in the center.
Right. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a fun podcast.
The Cholo Vision.
And you're calling it, what's it called again?
Ghoul School.
Ghoul School.
It is fun, but it's a lot of work. Yeah. It's a lot more work than I bargained for.
You made a podcast school themed.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why that was I don't know why I decided to do that now, because now it's a lot of reading and a lot of, and because for this first season especially, it's a lot of work because there's not a lot of scholarly work out there on found footage films.
Oh, on found footage. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot for horror, but not specifically found footage. So there's a lot of me having to like kind of piece together a through line for a lot of it, and to varying degrees.
You should watch George's favorite documentary.
Oh yeah, I'm a big found footage guy. There's a movie that we did for this show called Memorial Day 2000. Are you familiar with that?
No.
It is a Michigan summer vacation with a bunch of RVs and like
white
things
trash,
being
folks.
Set on fire and people vomiting.
I already love it.
Yeah. And it's on YouTube, and we did a whole 40-minute...
Yes.
We did an episode that was longer than the documentary.
We did. And you also love the Russian dashboard.
Yeah, we should... I'll send you a link to that. Oh, I don't know if actually the link still works. But yeah, there's this movie called The Road Movie. It's
I've heard of this.
Yes, yeah. We'll do an informal screening sometime.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's kind of veers on horror.
Kind of. Yeah. It's horrific.
Yeah.
I don't know are those the same things?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that kind of blurs the line, and
speaking of,
in the film we're talking about today, there's a lot
what
of that actually
segue.
As well.
Yeah, and we are talking
Cropsey.
Which I didn't know what the name meant at first, but they really explain it as we go into it. Should we break down Cropsey for just kind of go sequentially?
Well, it's the like name thing.
Cropsey. Well, actually, on the Cropsey website, they kind of break down like the legend. It's an urban legend that goes way back to like the 1800s. There was like a family, the Cropsey family.
Jasper Francis Cropsey.
Right, you found that? Okay, yeah.
Good old, and then, that's an 1800s name.
Yeah. God, nobody names their kid Jasper
anymore.
No,
there's no Jaspers anymore.
That seems like 2018 there would be a baby named
for
Jasper.
Sure. Oh, there's
baby Jaspers.
I feel like there's some new Jaspers now for sure.
Right. It's like some Ingrid Go West babies.
Yeah.
Jaspers.
They're just born with a handlebar mustache.
Exactly.
Jaspers.
A curly Q. Yeah.
As opposed to my Vincent Price
mustache.
You have a very good horror movie mustache right now.
So Cropsey goes back to the 1800s and it's an urban legend.
Right. So I here's the thing. Like, so urban legends, I mean, if you count the 1800s, I don't think that area was super urban. When you say urban legend, they just
I don't
mean
think
like
the
a
Hudson
modern
Valley
legend.
Was.
Yeah. Like, and this is all takes place basically Staten Island is what we're talking about here. And the filmmakers, whose names are Joshua Zeman. I think I'm saying that right.
Zeman.
Barbara Brancaccio. Great name.
Yeah.
Amazing name.
Sounds like an NPR name, doesn't it?
I think it is. I think there is a Brancaccio who's an NPR. Maybe there we go.
Yeah, but Barbara is way too normal a first name for that NPR
Babs
character.
Brancaccio.
Yeah, yeah.
Like for Staten Island, it would be maybe Babs Brancaccio. But,
she might be related to David Bianculli.
Yeah, that could be it. That's very Italian sounding.
Yeah.
Well, actually, so Staten Island is... Everyone on Staten Island has an amazing accent to start off with.
Yeah,
like
fucking Staten Island.
Yeah, except for the filmmakers for some reason. They have the most, like, we're going to, like, explore this.
We went to Tish, so we lost our
accent. Who knows, yeah. Staten Island has this legend.
I think Barbara doesn't really have it so much, but I think...
her mom does, I think.
But the other...
Josh,
he still has it, especially when he's talking to... Staten Island residents, and he's doing the, like,
it
hey,
comes
I'm
out.
Just a guy from the neighborhood. Let's talk, you know?
Joshy from the hood.
Yeah. Let's talk.
Now, my first time watching this, for the first 15, 20 minutes, I was like, is this, like, the Spinal Tap of horror movies?
Can we talk about that for a second?
Is this someone trying to do an X-Files thing?
I thought for sure it was, like, a Blair Witch Project kind of spoofy thing. I didn't think it was real. When I first started watching
The first thing that made me question it was that they had people being interviewed in the 80s and in like the 2000s. So it's like, okay, these are real people.
Yeah.
And then they just like, and then a child was killed. I'm like, ugh.
No.
Why did I think that?
Why was I having fun?
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to kind of enjoy this Blair Witch type cockamamie scare tactic. But then I'm like, ugh. There's a body count, which is the problem with all of these things when you get into the true crime stuff. It's like, which I guess is why, if you get into fictional horror, it's a slightly different game.
Yes, fake crime.
It is, but we still discuss things where we're like, we'll make jokes, and then I'm like, oh, I feel bad. We're talking about 9/11 right now.
All right.
We're talking about...
When are we not talking about 9/11? Yes.
Are you a horror movie aficionado? Like, do you go deep? Do you roll deep?
Yeah, I roll pretty deep.
Interesting.
I don't consider myself an expert, but I am very knowledgeable.
Are there horror movies, though, based on real events?
There's horror movies based on Cropsey. At least two.
Yeah, so the Cropsey legend, which started, with the Cropsey family on Staten Island, and then has kind of evolved into this East Coast, not just New York.
Summer camp
but
kind of,
East
too,
Coast
right,
summer
yeah.
camp
yeah.
legend, became, regular lore, standard culture, basically, for the East Coast, especially in summer camp settings, that then went on to inspire The Burning and Friday the 13th to a degree. I mean, The Burning insofar as the character's name is Cropsey. The killer's name is Cropsey in that movie.
Oh.
So... And you could argue that there's a degree of inspiration from the Cropsey legend in Halloween, in John Carpenter's Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea of an escaped mental patient that's out there killing people. The difference, it's teenagers instead of like children, but it's the skeletons there, you know?
Yeah. That was remind me, I had a question, which I'm not sure where you're from, but did we all grow up in a place where there were creepy legends about certain buildings or certain like campgrounds or parks?
Sure.
Yeah. Paco, what was yours?
Well, I mean, there was a house on our block that was super creepy and the old lady lived there. We thought she was a witch. I remember that. She had a lot of weird cats and her front porch was all busted up. And
was that just family or like school kids knew that one?
That was school kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No family that I can remember. However, the first transatlantic cable was used to arrest one of my hometown's residents in the early 1900s because he murdered his wife. Whoa. and took off to England. And the first transatlantic cable was about him.
Oh, wow.
And he was one of Madame Tussauds' first wax figures.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I grew up in a tiny little fucking town in Michigan.
Okay.
We always bring up
drinking that. Game.
It's a drinking game.
If you're driving your car right
or,
now,
or on the hand. Lower. I ain't no troll. No, okay. I am a troll. Lower Peninsula. I ain't no Youper. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But so that was Clay. His last name was Clay. And we used to call it the Clay House. And we're all like, that's where he lived. So, those are my two. And then there was the guy who kidnapped and raped and killed all the kids, too. Him. That was scary.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
That guy, yeah. He was a little scary.
Yeah, you know, Pennywise. The, yeah.
Michigan cropsy. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a lot of crops in Michigan.
Andy, where did you grow up, and did you have a legend?
I grew up a few places, but, oh, gosh.
This show's over.
Oh, what is that? Oh, it's just wedding. Right.
Oh, my God, he's been dead the whole time.
That's kind of it's kind of like
good night, everybody.
It's kind of like the legend of the scarf, you know, the woman that would that you pull the scarf off, her head falls off. My pinky just came off. I got to put that back on.
Put your pinky back on.
My cat just ran away with your pinky. Yep. Sorry.
Well, it's fine. We'll clean the litter box later. Mm-hmm. I grew up mostly in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and in a suburb of Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Okay.
So we kind of had to make up our own legends. Like we had a cornfield behind our backyard and then like a little wooded area behind it that we used to like make up stories about. And you know, the kids, your parents tell you like, don't play in the cornfield, you'll get lost. But it's like, fuck that. We're going to play in the cornfield.
Sure.
And just, you know, you make up stories because you're bored. It's the suburbs and there's no real history there. Mm-hmm. So you're just going to make up some stuff.
Okay, so you're not from the hardened streets of Cedar Rapids.
No.
Yeah,
no,
you're from the burbs.
I'm not from the island. Yeah. But there was, you know, there's stories around, like you hear, my dad's from a very small town in southern Iowa. My mom's from a pretty small town in northern Iowa, where I guess the king of the gypsies was buried in the amusement park.
Okay, that's a good legend.
I think that's pretty cool. I can't find any corroborating stories online about it, but supposedly, you know, the Arnold's Park was full of, I'm sorry, Roma people.
Oh, yeah, the Roma.
There you go.
And
I apologize.
Their king was supposedly buried in the amusement park, and
wow,
that's a cool legend.
Why would he be in Iowa?
I don't know.
Sense.
You know, they travel and they like amusement parks. Mm-hmm.
This also sounds like the plot of Paddington, possibly. I like to combine the Paddington.
I do
ones.
Like marmalade. I will say this though, that where my mother is from, Spirit Lake, Iowa, was the site of an event in Iowa history called the Spirit Lake Massacre. And the summer camp that I went to there, called Camp Foster in Okoboji, Iowa, is right around where the Spirit Lake Massacre happened. So while we didn't have a cropsy legend at that camp, there were ghost stories. There were stories of, like, if you go to a certain part of the woods, you'll hear the war drums from the Sioux.
So it's a Native American massacre.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's real. That definitely happened.
No, it really happened. Yeah, like, the massacre, it was two-sided. It was like Inkpaduta and his folks killed a bunch of settlers.
There were good, great people on both sides.
And then, there was violence on both sides.
I can't believe I'm doing this podcast with a couple snowflakes. Jeez.
Look, I don't want to freak anybody out, but I'm getting a bit too straight about Jason. There's violence on both sides. But yeah, there's like supposedly a ghostly head rolls down a hill on one of the sites of the camp.
I just remember we had an opera house in my little hometown, and an actress fell off the balcony or something onto the stage. You can still hear her, like, speaking and whispering and footsteps and stuff. I just remembered that. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. We had a mansion called the Bruce Moore that has some ghost stories.
Yeah.
There's,
well, let's get down
lots
to brass tacks.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have one?
Sorry.
Not about the documentary. I want to know, like, do you believe in ghosts? That's what I meant. Come on, Andy.
I kind of do, but yeah, I kind of don't do. Like, you know, I don't believe in God or whatever, so like, part of me is like, it's kind of a trick. It's silly to believe in ghosts, but at the
same time,
you know, like, there's a lot of shit we don't know, right?
Yeah.
So maybe.
Have you ever seen one, felt one?
I supposedly, according to my mother, when I was a kid, I woke her up in the middle of the night.
Spooky.
and said, there's a, I was like staring, I was staring into the corner of the room.
Yeah.
And my mom is like, what are you looking at?
Oh, that's
honey?
Scary
what are
by you looking itself. At?
And yeah. My dad wasn't home. He was out of town.
Chasing and, skirt.
Probably. Yeah. No, selling up refrigerators.
Sure.
We're sorry, Mr. Sell.
So then I'm staring into this corner of the room. My mom's like, what are you doing? What are you looking at? And I'm like, you don't see him?
Oh no.
The man in the corner.
Shut up.
And she freaks out and she's like, no, I don't. There's nobody there. There's no one there. And I'm like, yes, he's there. Don't you see him? And she's like, well, okay, if there's a man there, why don't you describe him to me? And I'm like, well, what? He's old. He's wearing gray pants and a gray shirt and he's got white hair.
Holy shit.
And then my mom goes, okay, well, if there's a guy over there, why don't you shake his hand?
What?
And I go, I can't. He doesn't have any hands.
Oh my God.
And then you're like, I just woke up. I don't remember anything.
Where am I?
Yeah. I mean, I was a kid, so I don't know.
This was late at night?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Why did you drop your ring then?
That's what you're supposed to drop the ring. Dude.
Oh my God.
Jesus, that's spooky, yeah, man. If we my just fucking got all, kid had yeah. done that to me, I'd been like, hit the bricks, weirdo. I see
like,
dead people.
Just kidding, Mom. Yeah. I'm a comedian.
Just kidding, Mom. He does have hands, and they're really big.
Full of knives. What about you, George?
Oh, do I have? Did I ever
all the above.
Fool my mother? Didn't really necessarily believe in ghosts. I did believe in alien abduction. I saw some pretty good videos that made me think about that. Okay, Whitley Strieber?
No.
Okay, something else. But our San Jose is where I grew up, and the legend of San Jose is the Winchester Mystery House, which maybe everyone knows a little bit about.
Dude, I want to go there so bad.
I've also heard it's boring as fuck.
Yeah, but I like boring old houses.
Well, then you'll love San Jose. You should really go to San Jose. And that's the best story. They're going to make a movie based on her.
They did.
They made it? It came out already?
It came out
already.
It's
like Kristen Dunst or something? Who is it?
No, it's Helen Mirren.
Okay, okay.
It sucks. Okay. It's a real bad movie.
It's too bad.
Which is very... much too bad. But Helen Mirren is, you know.
Nothing good can come out of San Jose.
Right.
Really what it's
basically. Not even the sharks. Do you remember there was that TV show when we were kids that had like scary stories? There was Leonard Nimoy had In Search Of. Do you remember In Search Of?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of.
But there was another one.
Well, there was Unsolved Mysteries.
That's it. Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh,
that's
the theme
one.
Song to that
so
still
spooky.
Gives me chills.
Yeah. It was very scary. Me, like, I unfortunately, my parents wouldn't let us watch scary stuff or even the Three Stooges, but like, I got to go to my friend's house and see like Unsolved Mysteries Ooh. And In Search Of and stuff like that. It was always scary.
I one of my primal memories is like watching my parents watching Carrie like over like through the slits of the staircase just kind of like I shouldn't have been up and then just like a bunch of things that happened in Carrie, but the very last scene in Carrie just fucked me up for a long time.
Did you see the pig blood scene?
Oh yeah, I saw it too. That didn't bother me as much. Really, the only like the last little thing with Amy Irving, am I spoiling it by talking about
the hand out of the grave?
In the 70s or whatever.
And then, actually the reason that Sean Cunningham at the end of Friday the 13th, inspired by a Cropsey legend, he had the kid popping out, he had Jason popping out of the water on the lake because it had worked so well when he saw Carrie.
Right. Oh. Which reminds me, we have not done the De Palma movie. I need to see that De Palma movie, the Brian De Palma documentary that came out maybe 2 years ago. I don't know where we can get, I think maybe it's like on Showtime or something.
Okay. Yeah.
But speaking of just like film and horror and whatnot. But yeah, so those are the urban legends we grew up with. And this urban legend has a real body count, unfortunately. Right. Cropsey, it wasn't a guy called Cropsey. It's just like, it was a boogeyman of the woods.
A long time after this legend had already been circulating for a while. So it's kind of a misleading thing in the documentary where it's like, Cropsey was real. And it's like, okay, well, but not that Cropsey.
Yeah.
It's a different thing.
Kind of,
we don't even know.
Kind of like Slender Man was not real, right?
Yeah,
but then people did things in the name of Slender Man. Yeah. But this is not inspired, like Cropsey didn't inspire these guys. It's just there was a real institute called Willowbrook that was a home for, I guess it was a tuberculosis ward at some point, mm-hmm. and then it basically became like a home for developmentally disabled people.
Right.
And that's where our story picks up.
Yes. And unfortunately, it also...
Sorry.
No. It's it launched the career of... what's his name? I just forgot his name.
Geraldo Rivera.
Unfortunately. Yes. And that's like the best thing he's ever done.
Yeah, it seemed like he actually did some good.
He was like a real journalist and like and got that place.
Well, still exploitative.
It's still super like the stuff he's saying is like, Jesus, pump the brakes now.
Yeah.
Like he's the pitying cries and the moans. What can I tell you about the smell? Like,
right.
It's like, all right, like we get you think you're doing the right thing. And yes, this does need to be brought the attention of people. But when you sensationalize it to such a degree, you're using these people, one, as props for your mm-hmm. career, but also you stir the outrage like this, and what's going to happen is this is going to get shut down. And yes, it should be shut down, mm-hmm. but what do we know about American institutions and bureaucracy?
Right.
It's not going to fix it. It's just going to let all these people out, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, that's the thing that I was thinking about looking at this with like our a modern day, whatever. This came out in 2009. It's not like I'm like so evolved from 2009. I'm still my 2009 version of me, but like just like the way this thing talks about like mental health, it's not very, you know, it doesn't give it. It's just like, oh, they were real monsters. Mentally ill people are real monsters. Yeah. That's kind of like the attitude of this,
right?
Maybe not the documentary itself, but like the attitude Geraldo. That allows like the Geraldo type of mentality.
Well, it's that like the movie Freaks, where you know the narrative.
Still a good movie though.
It's
somehow.
A great movie. It's a great movie, and the narrative of it is actually very empowering because mm-hmm. Todd Browning's whole thing was that these are people and we should treat them as such. Mm-hmm. But the studio's reaction to it and the reason that they like heavily edited it and kind of shot it down even in the 1930s was that they were afraid it was going to freak people out too much, which is the other side of that exploitative attitude of like, well, this is shocking imagery. And it's like, yeah, it is, but it's because these people are being treated this way. It's not because these people are different. Shout out to Diane Arbus.
Well, so Willowbrook does get shut down.
Yes.
And what ends up happening? The people that used to be there... And I guess some of the people that... Okay, so someone who worked there is the main suspect in all of this.
Right.
And he goes by Andre Rand, and he was an employee of Willowbrook. But like a lot of people that had nowhere else to go when they shut down Willowbrook, people just start living on the grounds of that place because they don't know where the fuck to go,
yeah.
And it's empty. It's abandoned. It got shut down by the state or whatever.
Right.
So. Yeah. And it's... Staten Island, I don't know a lot about Staten Island. I know some people from there. I know that it overwhelmingly went for Trump in the last election. I know that it's largely a landfill.
Right, they talk about that. Right. It was like the garbage dump of New York.
Yeah. I know what I've learned from Wu-Tang about it.
Right.
But it's weird because the film makes a lot. I saw it in 2009.
When it came out.
2010, maybe, when it came out.
Theater? You seen it in a theater?
No, it had played some festivals, and then when it was made available online, I watched it immediately because I'd heard such good things about it at festivals, especially in the horror community.
Okay, people were talking about this in the horror community.
Yeah, it was a big thing in horror circles, so I watched it. And was very... I loved it. I was like, this is one of my favorites, and watching it now, I'm kind of like... I still like it...
Not the reaction I think either of us had.
No.
Love is not the way I felt about this.
No.
I think what I like about it is that it hits the horror thing.
Okay, yeah, it does do that.
It hits its point mm-hmm. of it. The film itself is an urban legend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's its storytelling device. It's not a particularly responsible or ethical documentary.
It's not journalism.
Yeah, no.
By far.
No. It doesn't present any physical evidence. It doesn't present any compelling arguments. It makes a lot of assertions without sort of piecing it together the way that a real documentary should.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear that these filmmakers aren't, you know, they have not read any Bill Nichols. Like,
right.
They don't know how to put together a compelling thesis in a documentary.
Yeah, I think Barbara, this is her only IMDb credit.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, Josh made another film after this called Killer Legends, which I like a lot better.
Okay. So he kind of improved all his Steadicam work.
But it's funny to watch this after seeing that, because in that film, he's got this like hip beard and his hair is all cool.
Yeah.
And it's like he's a cool guy now, even though in this he's kind of a dork.
He is a dork.
Yeah, what do we feel about him inserting himself into this story so much?
There's so much Spurlocking.
That's a good point. That is actually what...
He got Spurlock all over this. Mm-hmm. Don't touch that dock. It's got Spurlock on it. That's kind of what I didn't like about... I had a hard time watching this all the way through. I saw it once. People talked about it so much that I was like, fuck, I got to see this doc.
Growing up on Staten Island, Barbara and I had often heard the legend of Cropsey. For the kids in our neighborhood, Cropsey was the escaped mental patient who lived in the tunnels beneath the old abandoned Willowbrook Mental Institution, who would come out late at night, snatch children off the streets. Later, as teenagers, we assumed Cropsey was just an urban legend, a cautionary tale used to keep us out of those buildings and to stop us from doing all those things the teenagers like to do. But all that changed the summer little Jennifer disappeared. That was the summer all the kids from Staten Island discovered that their urban legend was real.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you see the Slender Man doc?
Which one? The HBO one, right?
The HBO one, yeah.
I watched half of it.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah.
I need to, but man.
Yeah.
It's bothersome.
Yeah.
And it's not for the reason that this is bothersome.
Right.
Well, for some of the same reasons.
Right. But just because of material or some.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doc is pretty disturbing when you're just like, what? Like, I can't believe kids think that shit's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's insane.
But I think that's funny because, I mean, it's not funny, obviously, but it's interesting because there's, in this film, like you said, you thought this was fake at first. And that is a result. It's like a postmodern result of things like Blair Witch Project and Last Broadcast and these other, you know, pseudo docs and found footage horror that kind of like push this conceit of a reality that's not there.
I just now understood what found footage horror meant.
Yeah, it's the
got it.
Well, Blair Witch would be like the primary, or this is, it's like there's that other.
Well, there was
Cannibal
Holocaust
thing.
Okay, in 1980, but there was there was
Holocaust
stuff before that. But Cannibal Holocaust is really the big one, and then there was UFO abduction in 89, and then Blair Witch Project in 99, and Last Broadcast in 98 were sort of the two that kind of broke things open.
Were the 80s the best decade for B horror output?
In my opinion, yes, but I think that's largely because I'm biased because that's what I grew up with.
Generation.
Yeah. I still love a lot of the stuff from the 60s and even before, but my heart belongs to the 80s stuff.
Yeah,
I can't.
There were a ton, it seems like, in the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember going to the video store and just being like, there's just like horror movie aplenty.
Oh, it's the best.
You think because it's cheap to make?
I think that's traditionally what people say about, but even though nowadays you need like a good CGI budget, it seems like.
Yeah, depending on what you're trying to do with it. Like, it's the thing about horror is, and why it's kind of, I think the genre of the misfits and whatnot is that, I mean, aside from, you know, transgressive imagery, it's the genre that the studios can't figure out.
Okay,
they can't crack the code.
So it's indie by nature because you can't like do a formulaic thing with it.
Yeah, because you can't.
You know, it's formulaic in some ways.
It is, but as soon as a formula becomes a standard, it's ridiculed and then abandoned or reinvented. And studios also don't like to take risks, and horror filmmaking is all about taking risks, and that's why they're low budget, because you have to make them low budget to get a profit on them.
And it's produced like these auteurs, I think, in the 80s is maybe where it's interesting. Like, we were talking about John Carpenter yesterday with some friends, and, you know, like that whole thing. Like, John Carpenter was so resourceful with everything he did.
Right. Yeah.
It's like real effects.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The Thing is like a pretty amazing piece of filmmaking.
It is. But it's also interesting because it was the largest budget, I think, that anyone's allowed him to work with.
Oh, really? Oh. Not the James Woods vampire.
Jesus. And it was a failure. It was a horrible failure. It bombed in the box office, and it's one of the most celebrated horror films of all time.
What's the highest grossing horror film?
Halloween.
Oh.
Carpenter's Halloween. Get Out
did well.
Get Out did really well.
Like theater box office, right?
Yes.
But I don't think it's topped any, like,
I don't think
overall
it's broken
charts.
Any records.
Right, like Halloween must be one of the big ones. Well, I mean, that's why John Carpenter got money to
Halloween
do
was the highest grossing independent film of all time until, I mean, there's some disagreements on this because there's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in, what, 90?
Oh, that one?
But that was Golden Harvest, which is a foreign distributor, I think. So it maybe qualifies as independent here. I'm not sure what the controversy is.
This brings up a question I was thinking about, like how much true crime and horror overlap? Do you feel like there's a natural overlap in the communities?
I think so. But I also think there's this kind of standoff-ish sort of barrier there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where,
I think gender-wise, maybe that's one of the things, because true crime is huge with women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think horror tends to be.
It's interesting because horror films, I think, are more progressive gender-wise than pretty much any other genre.
The last girl,
yeah,
heroes.
The final girl trope, but also just women in general tend to have more speaking parts and larger roles in horror movies. It's because, again, it's indie and low budget by nature. Women are allowed more access into, you know, above the line roles in creating horror films. Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, yeah, Near Dark.
Catherine Bigelow started in horror.
Yeah.
You know,
Near Dark is pretty great.
Near Dark is awesome. And
well, that's interesting.
So there's a lot of that, but I think fandom wise, horror is still pretty male dominated.
Yes,
there are a lot
so.
Of women involved in horror, especially in the academia circles of horror.
Right.
You've got the Faculties of Horror podcast. You've got Rebecca McKendry on the Shockwaves podcast. There's a lot of women in horror survey and criticism and theory and in the filmmaking process. But the fandom of it is still largely male dominated, whereas the fandom with true crime, which is a weird thing to say,
I know,
but you know, it's where the times we're living in. It makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. I had a talk with a friend who lives in New York City about this. She's a huge true crime fan, and I was asking her why she thought women were predominantly the largest audience for true crime stuff, and she's like, "Because that's our fucking life,
right?" Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. That's the reason Get Out was huge.
That's
for the same
horror.
Reason.
Yeah,
same
that's
reason.
Their horror. Like, you know, women are statistically
the victims
of these things. And it's
crazy.
So it's, I get, like, I'm not a Law & Order SVU fan. I'm a classic Law & Order guy. I like L&O Classic, baby.
Yeah.
This is Dick Wolf, by the way.
Yes.
Good, nice to meet you.
Yes, nice
huge fan.
Thank you. I'm pretty good.
But SVU I never really got into because the sex crimes angle of it bothers me so much. But most of the women I know, and not to make anecdotal generalizations about an entire gender, but most of the women that I know, when we talk about Law and Order, they're into SVU. And I'm just like,
same reasons,
are you kidding me? Like, how can you? But it's the same. It's like, well, because this is what the world, you know,
this is what the world is. When I asked her that, she shared a story that had happened like the last, she lives in Manhattan, and she was like, I was walking from the subway to where I live, it's like six blocks, and she noticed this guy was keeping pace with her behind her, and she would speed up, he would speed up, she would slow down, he would slow down, and she got to a stoplight and was just kind of standing there, and this random woman came up and she's like, hey, how are you, it's been so long, I haven't seen you in so long, and the dude took off, and she said, it's just another sister looking out for another sister. Left, and my, her, she was like, this random woman like saved her because she could tell. I was like, that's fucking nuts. I can't believe women have to put up with that shit.
Man, I have been doing a bit on stage about something that happened recently that's sort of like from the other perspective of that, which was I was walking down the street and I had to take a shit. And then there happened to be a woman in front of me. And so I couldn't really slow down more than I would like to in terms of social contract. And she kept like looking over her shoulder at me. I'm like, I'm trying to give you space, but really there's not a bathroom for two more blocks. I don't know what else to do.
Like, I'm constantly
shit. Like, IBS? Well,
not,
IBS
not, no, no, not, not shitting.
No high five for IBS.
For all those podcast listeners, George went in for a high five for IBS. That's
awesome. I feel like everyone should high five that. You need support. But I'm constantly.
And then wash your hands.
Scenarios.
Scatological, pathological.
Before returning to work, please. Where I'm walking, and if there's a woman that just happens to like turn the corner where I am, I'm like, I'm going to just
slow down.
Or change direction and go three blocks out of my way and come back around just to keep this person from feeling uncomfortable now.
I would as well like cross the street or whatnot.
I've done
in
the same
scenario
thing.
It was not to me an option.
But well, not if you got a shit.
No,
well,
then that takes precedent.
Then the punchline of the bit is then it's just like all that anxiety just tighten my butthole up so I could get there without any mistakes.
Just helps. It helps.
Yeah. So speaking of just being afraid and walking around, people are so brazenly running around this old like broken down.
Back to the dock.
Former tuberculosis ward.
It's a segue.
Like, as children, just being like, it's fun here. I think there might be a murderer. They even know the Cropsey tale, and it's like sort of like a judge with a knife, or like some authority, male authority figure who is like burned.
Yeah, I did like that in the doc. Is that early on they give us all the different shades of this legend, and it's a little bothersome because like a lot of other things in the movie, they don't really go into the sources, the origins, the regionality to it so much. They don't.
Well, it's not a folklore documentary. It's another issue. Yeah.
But it's just like nothing in this film is examined very closely.
That's true.
And with that, it's kind of like, I get it because, again, we're still doing this. This is our narrative here. But it bothered me, like when, like getting back to the Willowbrook Institute and the sort of the ruins of it. And everything we see is sort of this, it's by implication. There's we see sleeping bags and the floor that's been swept clean.
Right.
And remnants of human life and stuff. And it's like, yeah, there's people, there's a huge society here. And it's like, okay, well, there might be people camped here.
Right.
But you've not interacted with any member of this underground society you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's all kind of in shadows and rumor.
And also, like, that's then it goes back to me as being like, what about the structural issues that led to this? I'm like, how do we like get, like, it's like this, you could watch this and be like, it's sort of shaming the homeless. It's sort of shaming.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe shaming them. I don't think it's shaming the mentally ill, but, or in the sense that they're treating Andre as like a mentally ill person, or, you know, so in that sense.
But with Andre's history, what I think is funny is, so when they arrest Andre,
not that I'm defending Andre.
I mean,
don't want to defend him.
When they arrest Andre, and this is in the wake of the story about Jennifer Schweiger going missing and them finding her body. What the fuck is a clay ball, by the way?
I did not know what that meant either.
I still don't understand.
They found some clay balls.
They found some clay balls, and that's where the body was. And you're like, okay, well, I don't get it. I don't get what that means.
Maybe they were like making, I don't know, like just like it was easier to pack the dirt. I don't know what that means at all.
I don't know.
Yeah, but it was very strange.
But they found some.
So they found her body and then they arrest Andre Rand. Mm-hmm. And then we've got these cop characters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Who are all full of shit.
Right.
All of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's NYPD still, right?
Completely full of shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're just lying. And some of them, like, gleefully lying. And it...
He's drooling, like, do you think they pummeled him, possibly?
Yeah.
The suspected child killer?
So, right. Okay. When we're getting to that, that's... Yeah. Yeah, totally. When they arrest him and they talk about the perp walk and they have the headline of, like, is Drifter a madman or whatever? Right. And it's like, okay, A, he's not really a drifter.
Yeah, he had a job.
He had a job at this place and it shut down and so now he's a squatter.
He's a squatter, right. That's
different.
Probably, yeah.
And madman, no, he worked there. He wasn't a patient there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So already this escaped mental patient myth has exploded,
mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm.
Because he was an attendant there, mm-hmm. which by the way, one attendant for every 50 kids, according to the Geraldo report.
That's insane.
Madness.
Yeah.
But
it's guilt by appearance, which our media does so fucking much.
Yes.
In this country, and I hate it. Yeah. I hate the media in this country.
Yeah, we're gonna
sucks.
Do West Memphis. Three at some point.
It's the
too,
same
so.
Thing.
But was a conviction. I think there was a child molestation conviction.
So he had previously
complicate.
I'm also
that,
not so. Trying to defend Andre.
That's the thing. It's like it's so no one wants to
indefensible.
There's two
however,
guys that do want to defend him, and I don't know if they love it,
right?
But they're doing
it.
No,
they don't.
They're just like the two African American
so
attorneys.
No,
just
they
like,
don't. They fell to
well,
their death.
But also, they're right.
Yeah.
Also, at the end of the film, when they say this is not a case of
there's
of,
no
of
evidence
proof beyond
evidence.
Reasonable doubt.
Yeah, right.
This is not a case of someone being convicted because of the evidence.
Right. Yeah.
And they're right. And I think that that's what this film is trying to do, is to sort of show how this is a horror story about all of these different parties at fault. It's about the breakdown of, you know,
institutions.
Of institutions.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that very recently, mm-hmm. all mental health care was essentially torture.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Like
that's state a good
run.
Point.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it hasn't been a century since transorbital lobotomies were
lobotomies.
A big thing.
Right.
But, And then the media, too, is implicated in this. The media is indicted because there's that headline, and they talk about the headline and the drool thing. And it's like there's that one professor, that journalist who's like, I teach this case in my class.
Oh, right.
And it's like, can we stay on him for a minute? Because I want to know what he's teaching about it. And I think a lot of times this film is trying to sort of let people implicate themselves.
Yeah.
Let them show their own hand in these things.
Is it,
and it
smart
doesn't
enough to
get
actually
clear?
Be, I don't like that's the
think
goal. Because
so.
I feel like we're talking about all these things that we're reading into it. And then when I view, like, from an intentionality of the filmmaker's viewpoint,
right?
I'm not sure what they are really. I don't think they have an agenda that's
however,
quite
that
so
is
clear.
Kind of the new school of documentary filmmaking mm-hmm. where you kind of gently lead.
Well, the personal narrative element of it. And the gentle leading, the kind of, they're very vague about it. They're not very clear about what their intentions or their thesis are. Mm-hmm. But there's a thing at the end where they say, where he says, and that's the power of the urban legend is mm-hmm. not to present the truth or claim to be the truth, mm-hmm. but to offer a range of possibilities.
Which I thought was like, just like, kind of like getting to the end of the story and then just like, you decide.
Yeah.
Good which, night, I everybody. Mean, which is a valid thing to do.
It's a cop out for
but,
sure.
Yeah.
But I also think that because that's there, I sort of have to acknowledge, like, well, even if it was just a matter of they got to the end of the editing process and were like, well, we're not saying anything with this. I know.
Yeah.
We'll say this and we're off the hook.
Like, I mean, they've got so many scenes of like, we're gonna go meet with Andre. Oh, he denied us, but we don't even have that part on camera.
They make so much of the story about them trying to meet with Andre and Andre denying them. And like, Andre, I agree with you that he probably was drugged and had the shit beat out of him by those cops, and that's why he's drooling in that perp walk photo. But he's also unstable. Like, there's clearly something going on with him.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, going back to the thing, I found this quote and I wrote it down. I don't remember who says it, but they're saying it to Andre when he's claiming he's still innocent. Maybe it was one of the I don't know. It must have been a cop because I don't know what was getting close to him in this period. But it was like, consider yourself a martyr for the safety of children.
Yes, I'm glad
and
you wrote that down.
Like, basically, that's what it was. And this is where it sort of overlaps with like Making a Murderer or something like that, where it's like, or West Memphis 3. It's just like, you fit the profile, and they do get into that. Yeah. So they get into that, but in a way where they're not like, let's exonerate him. It's just like, well, maybe there was more people involved. Maybe there's a cult. Maybe there was like a partner, a bunch of... I went down some rabbit holes about like some of the side things that came up later in this.
I really am... One thing that I'm excited about after watching this film, one thing that I've taken from it after this most recent watch... I'm excited to start going down some rabbit holes with the other stuff in this case.
Yeah.
Because I want to get into some of this physical evidence that's being presented or some of the other ideas that are being brought up in the film without any real examination, because there's some crazy stuff there.
Dude, can I just break down one thing for you?
Yeah.
Okay, so they talk about the cult that they think is a part of this. They're like,
By the way, if you ever are a member of law enforcement and you find yourself saying that there is a devil cult committing human sacrifice in your area, you should probably lose your badge. Mm-hmm. Like, that should be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go on.
No, I mean, I think, like, there is... maybe I'll take a break for the... We were talking about satanic panic in general and how that kind of played.
I
that
love
was a
that
huge
saying.
80s thing as well, and it also ties into like metal culture and I think maybe even horror movie fandom stuff too. But
well, there's some bleed over in metal and horror too.
That's true. That is also true. Rob Zombie. But okay, so the story with this cult is really interesting. The Process Church, they were they started in 1966 in London. They were two people that got kicked out of Scientology. Like, they were too crazy for Scientology. Wow. And then they basically were like, we're going to do auditing, but you know what? It's not going to be for infinity. It's just going to be for while we're on this earth as a way to, like, kind of a therapy.
Yeah, we're not Scientology.
No. We believe in the methodology, but we don't believe in the alien part.
Right.
So, and then they eventually, then they're tied into the Manson murders. These people in this doc are kind of throwing in that they're connected to Berkowitz somehow.
Dude, the Berkowitz thing, I'm not an expert, but like, it was a guy.
He's Son of Sam?
Yes, Son of Sam.
Yeah. Dogs talking.
He was a guy who had a neurological disorder and auditory hallucinations, and as a result, committed a few murders.
Yeah.
He was not the instrument of an underground, you know, clandestine society.
So that's the thing, is like, I think that information that they're sending to the parents of the kids, this got interesting. Did you look this up at all?
No. When the
Veronica Lucan?
The one who sent the letter to the parents. Holy sh!
You
also,
did go down it.
How awful do you have to be to send that letter to those people?
That's very bad.
Even the people who call Jennifer Schweiger's father and are like, we know where your daughter is. And it's like, what is wrong with people?
People suck, basically. Well, you should describe that letter to the listeners who don't really know what you're talking about.
Okay, right. So this whole the information about the Process Church or these assumptions that they're the people that are sending this information to the parents of the missing children are part of a group that follows this one woman, Veronica Lucan, who is the seer of Bayside. She had apparitions that were, you know, visions of Mary, visions of Jesus, messages. So maybe one of these messages was like, hey, so these kids were like killed by this cult.
Yeah, she had a vision that Holly Ann Hughes, the second case victim, was tied to a table and being sacrificed.
Jesus,
she had a vision of that.
And she was
a fun vision.
Funnily enough, denied by the Catholic Church, considered like these were not miracles she witnessed, according to the Catholic Church, because they went against some of the teachings of the church.
Right.
So it's like, it's also great to get your Catholic Church
basically verified. I think what we're
miracles.
Finding out with all of this stuff, the process, this Veronica's society and the Catholic Church and Scientology and all this stuff, is that once we start talking about religion, there's not a lot of good guys.
No. It's hard to find a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're pretty much all black hats.
Have you seen the doc Sister Catherine?
No. That's the one about the assault in the I was home once and one of my roommates was watching it and I heard audio of it and I was like,
what is this? And then subsequent cover up by the Catholic diocese in Baltimore. Then there's also
The Keepers.
Yeah. And then Who Took Johnny? Have you ever seen that doc?
Which one?
Who Took Johnny?
I'm thinking of Dear Zachary.
Oh, God.
That's another
tearjerker. Jeez.
No, I haven't seen Who Took Johnny.
Dear Zachary. Like, we've had people want to do that doc, and I'm like, I won't watch that doc again. It's too fucking much. Yeah. Who Took Johnny is about this kid in Iowa. Or Nebraska, same thing.
Okay, whoa.
Hey, sorry, buddy. I'm sorry. I get the same thing with when people are like, Wisconsin, Michigan, same thing.
Oh, yeah, no, way different.
Yeah, way different.
Yeah, it's a college football thing, by the way. Yeah, it's absolutely. Like, don't Corn compare Huskers. Me to a Husker.
Right. But it's about this kid who goes missing. He was just out delivering newspapers, and then his mom won't give up. She's like, because people are like, he just ran away. Mm-hmm. She's like, he was 12. He's not going to fucking run away. And then it's just like sex cult, this like sex trafficking, selling little boys to like city leaders and all this. It's quite a very heavy doc.
And is that real? Like, the thing is with this movie, we start getting into this cult stuff. And while these religious organizations, these cults, are true groups that exist with people in them. Nobody's sacrificing humans. There's no underground Morlock society of people from Willowbrook. There's no, like, the idea that they're...
It's just like poor people.
All of this stuff is happening is beyond me. But is that true? Like, the sex trafficking stuff? I mean, I know, obviously, that goes on in some places. It has to, because...
Well, it's like there's urban legends about organs being stolen, and then there's actually organ theft, you know?
Yeah.
They're just kind of like live in different categories in some ways.
And like, usually I think that the reality of it is pretty anomalous or pretty, you know,
it doesn't happen
divorced.
The way you hear it. You don't wake up in a bathtub full of ice. That's not how it usually happens.
Well, it's like, I do believe that there's probably a ring of pedophiles in Hollywood.
Yes,
you know?
I think a lot of people think that's
true. Do I believe that they are involved with the Satanic Church and that they are part of a vast conspiracy to brainwash us on the behalf of a race of lizard people? No, fuck you. Get out of here.
Oh, you don't?
Are they responsible for Corey Feldman's music career, though? That's
yes,
possible.
That they are. Yes.
But, the cult, the funny thing about this cult, though, I have to say, is like, it seems like in the Wikipedia entry, it ends with, they were called the Process Church, and now they're turned into the Best Friends Animal Society of Utah.
Oh, my
so
God.
Somehow it's turned into animal rights. I don't know what happened along the way of that, but you got to get into the rabbit hole of the Wikipedia
page. That's because
page.
You can't protest against animal rights.
Right. You just got to rename everything.
You have to rename it to like, point. We love children, church,
they're
of God.
They're just auditing goats.
Yeah.
They're just like, goat, how many body things do you have?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I mean, but again, these are things that are just brought up.
Yeah.
And then move along.
Yeah,
a bunch of other stuff. I mean, there was like eyewitnesses that come out 20 years later. The woman who was friends with Holly Ann Hughes, who has those amazing cornrows.
Oh, gosh. The cornrows are
the best
nails. Her nails, too, were amazing.
Fashion icon, Tanya Goodson.
Also probably full of shit. Like,
yeah,
I hate to say that.
I was
that.
Hanging out with, she didn't come out. Well, I mean, she was a kid at the time. But, yeah, there was a lot of witnesses.
I didn't see his face.
Saying,
okay, then how the fuck did you know who it was?
Yeah, right.
I felt his aura.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
A lot of witnesses. And so...
It's funny because, in a way, by showing all of these different people, it's almost like the filmmaker... I don't know if he means to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they meant to do this, but it's sort of like they're drawing a parallel between them and themselves as trying to be a part of this group, these like disparate groups of people inserting their own personal narrative into this tragedy.
Right.
Because that's what happens when a tragedy happens in a small community like this. Mm-hmm. The entire community becomes involved, whether they want to or not.
The Friends of Jennifer still exists.
Yeah.
You know, like the groups that were like,
and it's
going
like, were you
woods.
Really friends? What did, come on. Did you ever say nice things to her? I don't think so.
Right. But it is like the I thing. It's a community.
That's
thing.
A joke, and I'm sorry. Yes.
But it is like, yeah, like it just becomes like a part of the policing of the community. And that's why when you get anyone who fits the bill, you got to seek your vengeance where you can.
Mm-hmm. And on that note of the idea of this being martyrdom in the name of security, and not just the safety of children, but a community security, sense of security and sense of self and health. I'm fine with that. Like I mean, in this case, clearly I'm not fine with scapegoating anyone.
Right,
but it's like in Jaws when they kill that one shark and it's like, was this the shark? I don't know, but does everybody feel a little better? Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Andre Rand is still a shark.
Right,
you know
what
I mean? Like he's still an unstable person who may or may not pose a threat to others. Like the whole idea that he confessed to molesting a 9-year-old, but then recanted that confession and said it was coerced. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that the initial confession was maybe beat out of him. And again, I haven't seen any evidence about that.
Right.
So I can't.
But, you know, we can guess by like looking at every cop in this or like even the people, the men who aren't cops are just as scary.
The journalist who's eating a hot dog while he's talking about it.
Or even like what's weird is then you got these guys who are like that are avowed friends of Bob Graham. Like only at least two people are like, yeah, I knew him. And I think it was a setup. Like, at least there's two guys that say that. And
they were friends.
I think
it's
very unpopular Andre Rand. Bob Graham is one of the guys who's just like.
He was the one. Mm-hmm. He was the guy in the diner, right? In the booth with the beer.
He's just like, oh, here's a photo of Andre. Yeah, I could tell you
he's a good guy. Yeah. I could tell you he's a monster. Yeah.
And then just shrugs.
Yeah. He's the only one that makes any sense in this movie because he's the one that's just like.
Every good doc has that one guy in a diner or on his front porch that's just spinning some good yarns and talking sense. And you're just like, fuck, he's right. You don't know.
And he was at one point a suspect.
Right. They didn't even mention that he was a suspect. For, I guess, knowing him or,
I don't know why. But it's interesting because, that guy is the one dude who's like, these people are all full of shit.
Yeah.
And you watch them talk and you're like, yeah. They're
also
full
like
of shit.
Also like Holly Ann Hughes's brother grows up to be a lieutenant in the NYPD and that comes up in the hearings and stuff. They're like if he has any humanity left in him, he'll tell us where the body is.
Right.
Like
that's why you can't judge on emotion or with emotion, you know.
Yeah, and it's kind of again in a community like this. That's nearly impossible to ask of people because, I mean, you know, you've got the first victim, Jennifer Schweiger, who is found.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound ghoulish, but it's also.
It's your brand now.
It is my brand. True.
Might as well.
We don't know anything about the nature of her murder, you know. About the conditions she was found under, really. We don't know.
Well, there's a theory that the body was moved. There's also that theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it was moved closer to his campsite to frame him.
Like where there was blood that had pulled in the foot, and then she was buried head down. So it's like, that's probably not where she died.
We don't get any forensics in this, you know? And it's.
They may not have been doing a great job in 1987. Yeah,
and I also don't know if some of it was because some of it was maybe. Active in that case because this was made while that second case was going on.
Right.
While the second trial.
The Hughes case, yeah.
And it's, so you don't know. But yeah, so you've got that and that's a hot button. Like there's a body. She, was it Down syndrome?
Yeah, yeah.
She was Down syndrome. She was so young, you know, and then there's all of these other disappearances that it's like, okay, we can connect all these now. And these are children. And this is a small community. Mm-hmm. And it's a community that is, by and large, conservative, but also, like, insular and have a very kind of specific collective identity. And so it's impossible, I think, to ask anyone in there to be unemotional.
One time I was invited to the precinct to talk to them as they recorded me. And they start telling me about devil worshiping on Staten Island, and that maybe he was a part of this cult. And I didn't believe it.
What did they think was going on?
That maybe some of these devil worshippers had something to do with the kids vanishing. You can paint parallels to anything. And say, oh, yeah. You know, I could take a picture of anybody, okay? And I could say, this man is a mass murderer. And they say, yeah, I can tell. I can tell. I could say, this man rescued 6 people from a burning building. I can tell. He's a good man.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Like, that's an interesting dude because he's just like, here's a photo, right? Shrugs. You can't see the shrug in the clip.
Right.
He just shrugs. But, just like, I'm a bro. This is my bro who's in jail.
And he's like, he could be a monster or he could not be a monster.
Yeah, but he's kind of like that. That guy's kind of the one, having been a suspect himself, he's kind of like the one voice of reason in all of this to be like, yeah. Cops are corrupt. The media is biased. People tell you things that aren't true. It kind of goes, you know, to illustrate this film's odd relationship with concepts of reality and truth and evidence.
Which a documentary, you would hope there would be a little more of a strong angle. I mean, I feel like you've thought about this more, not that you've thought about this more than they have. You have maybe a stronger critique than they do. Like, the critique is like the institutions.
It's about the breakdown of the institutions. It's about that there's this, yes, you can point at this guy and say that's evil, but also you need to have a critique of the institutions. Mm-hmm. You need to have a critique of what led to these things happening. Like, nobody's defending Andre Rand.
Right.
Nobody's defending whoever did it. If, you know, because we still don't, that's the thing, is that all of these kids might have been killed by different people. We don't, or might have some of them run away and have been taken advantage by other, you know, underbellies of society.
There's a way to talk about it without, it's like, not like we're cutting him slack, but we're like, okay, like the thing about a lot of serial killers having head trauma, that's the thing that guy brought up. So it's just like, we still need to keep in mind these are people doing these things.
Yes.
And not urban legends doing these things.
Yeah, exactly. And that we need to address those things if we're going to progress as a society. You can't just, when you want to stigmatize mental illness too, is the thing too. Like, there's this thing, the Parkland kids stuff.
Yeah.
Like, did you read their proposal?
I did see something about that. Were you posting about how it was like basically like having a warning system basically like for the therapist to let the cops know.
To let teachers and mental health professionals notify law enforcement.
And it's not like that.
It's already rough for kids.
Right.
You know, it's already difficult. Like, when I was growing up, I know plenty of people my age that were sent to these like weird abuse camps and cults and things without any power to get out of it. Like, they were essentially, some of them, like, basically kidnapped in the middle of the night.
You knew people that were like kind of like trying to be like deprogrammed or something?
Yes.
Is that what it
like
was?
Like people that had been taken, essentially abducted at the request of their parents to be taken to facilities.
Boot camp. Yeah.
That were then, and then, you know, then there's also cops we've seen time and time again that they do not know how to handle mentally ill people.
No, like, that's a lot of people that are killed are basically mentally ill. Yeah. It's come out. Yeah.
So it's, we have to learn to look at that and address those things in these institutions. And like, because that's the thing, the way we handle mental health in this country is a gross injustice. It's a big problem. The cops are corrupt. The media is like, these are, and I think that maybe the film is trying to say all of these things, but that at the end of the day, it's the breakdown of these institutions. It's the fact that there is nothing left for these, for the people that are housed by institutions, whether they be mental health facilities, hospitals, or economic, you know, project housing.
But I feel like like I was saying, like you're articulating a thing that they're not articulating.
Yeah.
And like, that's the thing that where I get frustrated with this. But then also, it also makes me think about this thing of like, is true crime as a genre inherently conservative in some way? And then horror is inherently like more, less conservative. I don't know.
It depends compared to what though. That's,
I mean, people, there's long been this idea that horror, especially the slasher cycles of the 80s, were Reaganist in their approach to, you know, what family values and conservative ideology. I argue that that's a limited perspective. It's also a perspective that I think misses the point a lot of times, because
you're trying to read it for this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, you're looking at gender.
If that's what you think the film is saying, then you are saying that Betsy Palmer in Friday the 13th is the hero, and that's not the case. She is a villain. She is killing people, but also she's painted in kind of a sympathetic light because her child was failed by institutions. Her child was left to die because people were not paying attention to her because they didn't have the resources. And now she is punishing people that are not culpable. So it's this weird cycle. And in the case of Staten Island here, you have a community of a predominantly working class and sometimes working poor families that are just trying to live this kind of diluted picture of the American dream, and they think they have it, so they kind of fall in line with these sort of conservative ideologies, but they're victims just the way anyone else is.
Right.
But then now they're colliding in this ecotone, this spillover between their society and this failed mental institution, where, you know, the spillover is creating violence and tragedy, and all of these people are being failed because also now we bring in a corrupt law enforcement institution, and couple that with a media that's after sensationalism, and then into all of this clusterfuck of half-truths and straight-up lies, you have these warring sectarian religious cults that are muddying the waters even further, and these are people who were probably failed, you know? And we don't ever see a picture. I think what frustrates me most is that we don't ever see any of these patients from Willowbrook that were left over. Like, we never see any of them.
It's not really,
so we don't know where they went or what's going on with them. I mean, it's a fascinating idea. It's a disturbing idea. It's also kind of an exciting idea.
There's so many, there's like a lot of pieces of this that could have been spun off into their own projects, is how I feel. You know, there's like a lot of rabbit holes you could go on with any of these threads.
But while they're out there looking for these people, you get, I think what you called earlier, the Blair Witch.
Oh,
part
of
the
exactly.
Movie.
There's like that like scene where, you know, where I'm like, what's going to happen? Like, there's a cameraman. They got their flashlights are going down in the tunnels, and then they run into these other kids. But it's that spook moment.
It's, I get it. It's cheap.
Yeah.
But I love it. I think it's great.
Wait. Do you hear that? See, I just did it now.
That's a callback. Yeah. No one knows about that.
Yeah. No, like, yeah, it's very cheap, and it's very, like, William Castle. There's, like, this showmanship to it, but that's why I like it, because it's a campfire story, and they run into these kids that are out there looking for the legend themselves.
Right.
And that's why I like it, but, is because it ends with this campfire story moment.
How much shit would you shit if you were out there being like, maybe like this is real, man, pass that joint, and a couple fucking documentarians walk up with flashlights like, no, it's fucking real.
Yeah, I'd feel better about there being a camera, maybe.
Yeah. Documentarians are scarier.
They're scary enough. Yeah, that's true.
Loose change, my
Ken
friend.
Ken Burns' haircut alone.
Yeah.
But, sorry, excuse me. But then it ends then with them telling these kids
right
about what happened there, and the kids being like, what? They're like, yeah, did you know this is real?
Yeah.
And they're just like, what the fuck? Yeah. And it's great because, I mean, it's awful, but
that's the whole thing. It's great, but it's awful.
Yes. But it reminds me, I don't know if you've seen Killer Legends, the film that Joshua...
I did not see it.
Joshua Zeman made in 2014, where he is going around examining these other urban legends and the real stories behind them. And when he's talking about Candyman, which is not... I mean, it's they stretch to make the connection between,
like, you've seen this popular movie.
Yeah.
Now here's something
exactly.
else.
Exactly. We got the permission to use
where
this
the
clip.
The protagonist is a folklorist, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, that film is very postmodern.
I really like Candyman. I got a lot of thoughts about Candyman.
Candyman's awesome. Mm-hmm. I love Candyman. But oh, we shit.
Should we say it one more time?
But. So they're talking about that, and they're talking about where the idea of poisoned Halloween candy came from.
Okay.
And it's this guy in Texas, Ronald. I can't remember his name offhand. It's
McDonald.
O'Brien or so, yes, McDonald.
Reagan. We'll say Reagan.
Yes, Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. And they go to his house.
Oh,
and
right.
This is the thing, is that this guy.
Oh, this is still Joshua Zeman we're talking
about. Yes, it's still Joshua
Zeman. He goes to the house where that happened.
Where that happened, but now he's hipper. He's got a beard and cool hair.
Right.
Okay.
Because he had a successful doc.
So now he looks cool.
Yeah.
But
he. I hope he had that line, right? Like a clean line, a clean beard line.
But he goes to the house where this guy murdered his own kid with poison Halloween candy. And they knock on the door, and this old lady answers, and there's this moment where he's like, should we tell her? Should we tell her? Yeah. And then they fucking tell her.
Yeah.
And
that's fucked up.
Awesome. I mean, it's irresponsible and terrible and definitely not what you should do. But I loved watching it.
Right.
And it's, I mean, it's just a.
That's what he wants to do, I guess.
Yeah.
Just scare people.
He just wants to scare people. He wants to tell you a campfire story.
Has he done a. Oh, it seemed like he had some fiction involvement too with some fictional films. He wasn't all documentary.
Probably.
Like he had. I was just looking at his IMDb.
At it.
Yeah. He had some weird credits I was surprised by, but.
But I like. I hope he stays on this urban legend thing, because there's a thing that I like about it, where it's that we all have, you know, this woman too, when they told her, she was like, oh, I knew that story, but I didn't know what happened here.
Oh, wow.
At my house.
Yeah.
And the kid, when they tell them that at the institution rooms,
right,
is like, yeah, I think my mom has said something about that. So it's like, we have this familiarity with these stories.
Yeah, sure.
But we don't realize our own connections to them.
Right.
And I mean, we've all got these. You know,
yeah,
it's
ancient.
That's Patreon bonus material, like the murders that we know about and have been near.
We'll talk about our own murders, but I think I like it because callback. It just, these legends always serve as a reminder that all of us are always only a few steps removed from horrifying tragedy.
Right.
Like, there's always this something going on.
Thank you,
Werner
Herzog.
Yes, yes. And he said that while looking at a picture of a kitten. Andy, you are twisted, my friend.
So, Joshua Zeman was involved in producing Mysterious Skin and The Station Agent. For some reason,
what?
Very
Those
different
are
types
wildly
of materials.
Wildly different films.
But also, if we're going to do a cast this doc, which is a game we play, theme music here.
We gotta cast this doc. Cast this doc.
So let's
and that was our theme music.
Yes.
Joshua Zeman, I'm going to say right now, I want to say Jeff Fahey from Lawnmower Man.
Oh.
Based on this photo, but not like what he looked like in the movie, but like that photo, that's who he reminds me of.
Yeah.
Like a that's more present day.
There's a smoldering
I'm looking at Kiefer Sutherland right there.
Okay. I see a Kiefer, yeah. But yeah.
I'm thinking a younger Timothy Oliphant.
Oh. Okay.
We always are. We all are thinking of a younger.
Yeah. 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 I'm constantly thinking of a go.
And for
Boyd.
For Andre Rann, I was thinking George the Animal Steel from Detroit
That's
wrestling
good.
Fame.
Got that crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a weird one. Now, that detective we were talking. Did we talk much about that detective Frank
Oh, Frank
Saez?
No, we didn't, but I love him.
He looks like Obama to me. I don't know. I mean, let me bring up a photo and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
He's look, if anyone in this movie is involved in a satanic cult, it's him.
Oh yeah, he had a good line about that. Yeah.
He looks like where he's like I can't tell. He's like kind of downplaying it when the other cops are talking about it, but he's like they're out there. They're out there.
Yeah.
And he's like, are they sacrificing children? He goes, I won't say.
Right.
And it's
right.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, a cross between Obama and Herman Munster. Like Ed Gwynn.
I see a little Elliot Gould.
Okay. Whoa.
But like if you took Elliot Gould's like the top half of Elliot Gould's face and then combined it with whoever was the mouth of Sauron in Return of the King extended edition.
Right. I'll see your Elliot Gould and I'll raise you a Sam Elliott.
That's interesting.
Without the mustache.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Eric Bogosian, maybe.
Whoa.
He's got, there's a little Eric Bogosian.
Yeah. For people who are listening to this and you're wondering what's going on, if I was you, I would just Google image any of these people and you could play along.
Yeah. Mine for Andre Rand.
Yes.
It's hard to say.
Right.
Part of me wants to say Billy Bob from Sling Blade.
Oh, right.
Part of me wants to say Michael Rooker.
Uh-huh.
Like Slither era Michael Rooker.
Sure, sure.
But
I can
also,
see that.
I kind of just want to go for broke and have Robert Englund in the Freddy Krueger makeup.
Yeah.
Playing
Why
him.
Not?
That's for everything. He's
because
great
for
in
all intents and purposes, that's who he is. That's
is
what
who
he is to these people.
That is true.
I think your Kiefer Sutherland's pretty right on. I'm looking at a photo now. I think that could work.
Yeah.
Just he has that look like a young whatever in the movie where they die and come back. That kind of
Flatliners.
Vibe. Flatliners.
Oh
vibe.
Yeah, Flatliners.
What about
that was
the
a good movie.
Other two? Oh, I got one. The guy, the journalist who's eating the hot dog
right
on the street while talking about how they threw Andre Rand under the bus in the media.
Yeah.
That dude is Jerry Orbach from Law and Order.
Ooh.
Because
oh,
he's
yeah.
eating while talking
right,
about this
right,
stuff.
Right. Jerry
and
Orbach
is Law and Order
made
as
a career out of eating and talking.
That
give
was
me
his whole thing.
Give me crimes and misdemeanors any day. Fucking Jerry Orbach. That guy's a legend. Love the man.
Or you could get Cropsy from the movie The Burning
right.
with the Tom Savini effects on his face to play Andre Rand.
Is that what that photo
that's what
there
that
is?
Yes.
That kind of scarecrow thing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's
weird.
Okay. With the okay.
That's Tom Savini's makeup effect for the Cropsy character in The Burning, which produced by pre Miramax Weinsteins.
Oh, the Weinsteins.
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of monsters.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Jeez. Well, Andy, thank you. This has
We're
been
not
going to
cast the cops. Come on.
I'm kidding.
Oh, you could. You could try.
Kidding.
Just anybody with a
we'll
mustache.
We'll get them to play themselves.
David Koechner, every cop.
Yeah, yeah right.
Decided.
Exactly.
David Koechner should be in every documentary or biopic. But Andy, I'm glad that we were able to do this.
Me too.
Remind people where they can find you.
And hear you.
In the woods outside Willowbrook Institute on Staten Island.
You hear a ring dropping.
Yes, it'll be Andy. look out, it's Andy.
But you're on, you got your podcast we just talked about. That's going to be coming out. And
yes, School of School on the Unpops Network. I still do stand up sometimes.
Awesome.
I was like, did you retire and come back?
That's what happens to people when they move to LA.
Yeah.
Well, I still co-produce We Still Like You, which is a storytelling show in out here in Los Angeles. Awesome. There's also one in Chicago, one in Denver, one in Louisville, Kentucky.
Wow.
And it's a great show. It's all about shame.
stories of shame, and it's about the empathy we need from others to confront that shame, because the audience at the end of each story doesn't just applaud. They raise a glass and say, we still like you. That podcast is available for download on iTunes and wherever podcasts are. And you can follow me on Twitter at Andy_Sell, S-E-L-L, as in sell you an urban legend.
There you go. That's awesome. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We still like you, Andy. After all your creepiness you said today.
Do you really? After some of the terrible things I've said?
You were failed by several institutions.
That's true.
I still like you.
Yes, I absolutely was.
Including SubDoc. All right. And my memory cards.
Let's not get into that.
All right. Bye. Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SubDoc at subdocpodcast.com.
We love your support, but we also love your money. Donate today to SupDoc through our Patreon.
And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
If you want us to cover a doc, have suggestions for guests, or you just want to reach out, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.